Hey, Mets fans, what's going on? It is Shea Anything, Doug Williams, alongside Andy Martino. Hey, if you haven't already, give us a rate and review on iTunes. Say something nice. Give us 5 stars if you like it.
If you don't have anything nice to say, keep it to yourself.
Yeah. Although, I think we should say that if you don't like what we're doing, you should be honest.
No, if you don't like what we're doing, you keep your mouth shut. How about that?
Before we get into anything else, mm-hmm. Let's talk about Matt Harvey.
Okay. That's the topic these days.
He's a reliever, and he comes in, pitches 2 innings, and he came in. We all kind of thought, at least I did, that he was going to come in for the first time in an 8-1 game, and you were going to see what his stuff played like out of the bullpen. He came in a 4-4 game. He gave up the lead, 2 innings, 1 run, and he didn't speak with the media after. We're going to get to the on-field stuff. We're going to get to the idea of him not talking to the media. But, Andy, really what I find most fascinating about this is this back and forth we keep having on shows mm-hmm. like this, where everybody says, well, it's not all that surprising. Like I remember Sal saying after Matt Harvey got demoted, well, we can't be all that surprised. He hasn't been a good pitcher for a really long time. The problem is that it's almost like Matt Harvey is just now coming to grips with the fact that he's not as effective as he once was. Like, if this wasn't a big deal to him, he'd just meet with the media. Mm. But it seems like this is all such a surprise to him. He hasn't handled this all that well since it all went down. And it's like, dude, have you been watching what's been happening for the last year and a half, 2 years?
I could see how it would look that way, certainly, based on the way that he's handled or mishandled some things. I don't believe that he's surprised. I know, based on reporting, that Harvey has been really upset with himself and with the world for how things have gone over the past couple of years. I think that last year was probably one of the toughest years, certainly of his career, maybe his life. He was really tortured by being ineffective and being injured and all the things that have gone on with him. So he's been coping for quite a while with the new reality for himself. I'm still surprised that some people had an issue with him saying, I'm a starting pitcher. I don't think there's anything wrong with declaring what one wants to do. It may have been smarter to say after that something along the lines of, but I understand I've been a bad one for a while.
Or I'll do what's best for the team.
You know what? That's overrated because the team is not going to do what's best for you. So
yeah,
no team. So that whole thing, fans want players to always like, oh, I'll do what's best for the team. Like, they care about you. So come on. Everyone should be out for themselves.
I agree that it may not actually be something important to say, but maybe there are old-fashioned guys in that clubhouse who want to hear, I haven't been a good starting pitcher. I will do what is best for the rest of the guys in here so that we can win baseball games.
It wouldn't have been sincere. But
sincerity, is sincerity more or less important than just saying the right thing?
Well, that's a fair question. I mean, he would have gotten less criticism from a PR perspective. It would have been smart to hide behind a cliche. But as two people who have reported in clubhouses, cliches are the opposite of what you want to hear from a guy. You want emotion. You want rawness. And that's what he was giving them. As far as helping the Mets win, if he believes that he can help the Mets win more as a starting pitcher, he should say that. Again, it wouldn't have been the worst thing to say, comma, however, I've been a bad one.
Right, yeah.
People would have been like, okay, you're self-aware. I just think that this whole thing, and we've talked about this a little just between us and a little bit on BNNY, but not a ton, that the idea that he should be saying all the right things at exactly the right time is asking a lot of a human being who is watching his career, the thing he's worked for his whole life. I mean, his whole life. This guy's dad is a prominent baseball coach in Connecticut, and he's a baseball rat, Matt Harvey, and it's coming apart. So he's asked after a game or after being demoted to comment, and he's not. We can sit here and say, if you'd said exactly, like I could write you a script. But look, this is a guy in a difficult moment. So I'm just not going to come down too hard on him for not saying exactly the right thing.
Yeah, I'm less focused on exactly what he said and more focused on just kind of his mindset, because you mm-hmm. say that he's been tortured by this and he's kind of labored through it, the fact that he's worked so hard his whole life to get to this point, and it's unraveling. But it's been unraveling for a long time, mm-hmm. and he's been so optimistic when giving up 5-6 runs in these games. For the last year, he's been after games saying, yeah, I felt really good out there. I liked my stuff. So for the fans out there, I'm not sure that they feel like Matt Harvey's been taking it on the chin personally.
Yeah, well, that would be wrong.
Because we've been watching him take it on the chin professionally.
I get it. The way that he chooses to frame his comments and his mindset after games is clearly, I'm going to look for a positive. Dave Island's no fan of that, clearly. A game starts in the first inning, son.
Yeah.
And all that kind of stuff.
Wow.
So I wouldn't be surprised if that helped lead to the speed of the demotion, just the fact that they think he might be a little self-deluded. But he's looking for a way to tell himself, I'm not horrible. I have a lot of sympathy for somebody who is desperately trying to convince himself that his career is not over. And I'd be willing to give any person in that situation some leeway to cope.
And not at the age of 40 where retirement occurs to a lot of people. He's 29 years old.
I hear you that he doesn't sound accountable. And maybe he's not entirely accountable. Maybe he is babied and pampered and in a bubble. But I also know that he has been emotionally tormented by what he's going through. So that just leads me to say, okay, we're veering off course here a little, but it's a podcast. You had asked me, you brought up when we were talking about this, just the two of us, about David Wright and like, why didn't I have the same opinion on David Wright? Well, one meaning that I've said many times, don't feel bad for David Wright.
Right, he's made a ton of money. He's got a great family life, you know, that kind of stuff.
Because David Wright is a well-adjusted guy who understands the deal with where things are at in his life.
Yeah.
Not to mention the fact that he's made more than $100 million and Matt Harvey hasn't. Put that even aside. Matt Harvey's like a little bit of a lost soul right now, and David Wright isn't. So that's why I feel more for one than the other.
I guess, the word entitlement comes to my mind. Because, and I was thinking about that after not talking to the media. It's like he has felt ever since he went to the bullpen that he was entitled to be a starting pitcher. And I don't know what that comes from. It comes from being great once. Like, and I hear entitlement all the time. I mean, I'm a millennial. We are all apparently entitled. We all think we should only have this certain job title for a year, and then we should get promoted. We should be the CEO when we're 30. That is something we tend to have in common. But I just am wondering why if it's occurred to Salicata, if it's occurred to us here on the couch that Matt Harvey hasn't been great, so we're not that surprised right now, why does it seem like Matt Harvey's so surprised?
Because we're not him. Because it's really easy for another human being to see something objectively and clearly.
Yeah.
I can see
about you
in some
yourself.
Ways. I can see you and you can see me better than we can see ourselves in some ways. And I think it's just especially if someone's under duress in a really difficult situation.
By the way, just to change the subject quickly, you guys did a really, really, I don't mean to be hard on everybody, but they did a really bad job with tweets this week. Last week was fantastic.
Our loyal listeners?
No, we have three good tweets on the show. It's just we got less than normal. So if you're listening next week, follow our Twitter account.
Yeah.
When we do tweet out, ask questions. So if you've got questions, please ask us.
So those who tweeted were good, but those who didn't, we're negligent, is what you're saying.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
But this one's from Sean Campbell, who said, will the move of Matt Harvey to the bullpen signal the end of his time with the Mets or help him get his mojo back? And quickly, before we move on from Harvey, because we've spent a lot of time on it already, you've written about the possibility that, he's not with the franchise at the end of the season.
Or during the season. This is an interesting worded question.
By the end of the season.
Right. It could, the move of Matt Harvey to the bullpen could both signal the end of his time with the Mets and help him get his mojo back.
Because
if this guy has his mojo for a little bit and another team comes calling, Mets are ready to move on here. So I could even see, but then again, look, if he's like an awesome reliever, the Mets are going to be like, we're paying you $5 million, let's keep you. So we'll see how it plays out.
Cool.
But this guy is not going to be a Met a whole lot longer, whether it's a week, a month, 2 months, or the rest of the year.
All right, so we'll get to a couple more Twitter questions in a second. Right now, let's start this segment, Do We Care? This is just a...
I shouldn't say a week. I don't think he's going to be cut in a week.
Okay.
Course of the season, just to clarify. Yeah. Yes, go on.
We knew what you meant.
I don't want to be misquoted by those sharks out there in the media who take my words out of context.
Got it. Let's talk about Do We Care? This is a quick segment. Just a couple things that are happening with the Mets, and I want to know, we want to know, or the people out there want to know if we care. Med Rosario has already walked more this year than last year. Do we care?
Do you care?
I do care. I think it's a sign of maturity at the plate. I think the whole point of having a young player and watching him grow is watching him grow and seeing how he changes and evolves in the big leagues. And if Amed Rosario wants to take more walks, it was really the biggest criticism coming into the season that his on-base percentage was pretty much exactly what his average was. So he should take some walks. I'm not saying walks are fantastic, but they're a very good thing to have in your repertoire.
Well, Sandy Alderson thinks walks are fantastic.
Exactly.
And, you know, I agree with everything you said. It's important that he shows a little bit more plate discipline. Keith has made the point on the air that they have to be careful because they don't want to take away the aggression that makes him who he is.
Right.
But I don't think there's any risk of that. He still swings at some pitches that are awfully far outside the strike zone. But, yes, that is a good – I care deeply because I think it does matter.
All right, you'll start with this one.
Okay.
And we're going to get more Cespedes in the show later, so we won't go long on this. But Cespedes might start golfing again. Do you care?
No, because there's no way to – I don't care because there's no way to draw a link between whether golfing makes him better or worse. It's all hypothetical.
Yeah, it is all hypothetical, and I can't tell on Twitter. Like, it's the weirdest thing. People were mad at him for golfing last year. Now people want him to golf again. I'm just not really sure why you'd be pro or anti-golf. There's no way for us to know what it actually
Maybe it helps him clear his head. Maybe it wears him out and he's not ready for the game. Either one could be true.
Michael Conforto is slugging 327. Do we care? I'm not going to care at this point. His on-base percentage is great. I think his on-base is 400 and his average is just over 200. He got off to a pretty good start. He's slowed down a little bit since. I think he'll be okay. If this stretch, it's just like Cespedes, we're going to talk about this later. If this stretch happened in July and August, nobody would really have noticed.
Yes, but the reason I care about this is because with Conforto, not only is it not happening in July and August, but it's happening upon his return from the shoulder surgery.
Yeah.
And, like, we forget about this because his timetable was good and quick in the rehab, but when Michael Conforto's, like, arm fell off, and it was a grisly injury.
Yeah.
People were wondering. People in the game were saying, uh-oh, he may never be the same. A shoulder is very important to a hitter.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't say that sarcastically. Like, that's an injury where people were like, is that the end of Michael Conforto, dynamic hitter? And hope not.
Yeah, hope not. This week in Keith Hernandez's Twitter, this one's a long one.
This is going to take you a while.
Some very good points, and then, as usual, it goes from baseball to personal in the same tweet.
Yes, he's good at that.
A bit concerned with Blevins and Ramos. Jerry is struggling right now, and since he is the only left-hander in the pen, it's troublesome. Ramos is what he is. He has great stuff, can make a hitter look horrible, then have control issues with the next batter. A real Jekyll and Hyde. He was this way with the Marlins. He is in a new role now, no longer the closer. He has to adjust and find a way to focus in these middle to late non-safe situations. It's difficult to bring someone in late and in a tight game when you don't know what you're going to get. He is a pro and is capable of making the adjustment. If he can become more consistent, he adds more depth to the bullpen. So just finished my room service breakfast, off to the hotel gym. Then I have to do a lot of promotional stuff this afternoon for my upcoming autobiography. I'm Keith Hernandez, on shelves, May 15th.
Beautifully done.
Really beautifully just, done.
And put and a bow around it for why he's tweeting in the first place.
It's just interesting because Keith is goofy, obviously. We love Keith. He's goofy on Twitter. He's goofy on the air. That's what makes him great. But that is such an astute realization about Blevins and Ramos. One of those things where if you study the numbers of the last week or so, Blevins is like sneaky one of the storylines right now because his job is to get lefties out. Even Terry Collins used him against everybody, and it's not working right now. And Ramos is so frustrating to watch because he's so dominant, and then he walks everybody.
Lefties hitting over 400 against Blevins as of this taping. And Ramos, by the way, I know that he's a breaking ball guy. He's a curveball guy. But he threw a 2-0 during the last homestand. When they were playing the Nationals, he threw a 2-0 breaking ball to Matt Reynolds. It's like, you can't throw your fastball past Matt Reynolds? Some Mets people were like, really?
Yeah.
2-0 breaking ball to Matt Reynolds?
I forget if it was Keith or Ron on the broadcast that said about Ramos that he just loves to make the ball move. Like, it needs to be spinning.
Right,
He doesn't feel comfortable throwing the ball straight. But anyway, like, I think that's a perfect example of why having Keith on Twitter is awesome. We've been listening to his insight on SNY for so many years, mm-hmm. and it makes the game broadcast so much better. But now having to be able to hear about him thinking about Blevins and Ramos, I know I say this every week, but and then talk about his hotel breakfast.
He just ties it all together in a way that no one else could.
Room service breakfast, underrated.
Oh, it's amazing. It's if you know it's coming, thing. And it's such a splurge, you feel like a king when they bring you these things in the morning.
There is kind of a bummer sometimes when you're staying at a hotel that is not all that nice, uh-huh. but you're not sure if it's room service nice or not, and you get into the room and you're looking for that booklet.
Right.
You're like, I wonder
right.
if there's room service at this place, and then you find out there's not. That's always a bummer.
As a baseball writer, you're often in the places where you would not.
Right.
But
Starbucks in the lobby, you hope.
But when I was at Disney with my family not too long ago, and we got room service breakfast a couple mornings, and it is a day to start. It is a way to start the day right. Now let's move on.
Okay. Some Twitter questions.
Since I couldn't even get that sentence.
Pat Abruscato.
Mm-hmm.
When will Mets brass realize they desperately need a major league catcher? We are giving away too many at-bats between our pitching and catchers. Also, it would help to have someone behind the plate who can occasionally gun down a runner.
Fair.
And the catching situation is not something that I necessarily would have expected to talk about this week because we've kind of moved on and Tomas Nito has actually played pretty well defensively throughout the first runner of the season. But do you think Sandy's like us kind of sitting there right now where this is just not the focus of his attention?
I know it's not the focus of attention. Yeah, they're not going to go get a catcher anytime too soon. If they wanted a Miguel Montero type, they'd have Miguel Montero. They're going to go with what they have. And by the way, not to defend the throwing of these Mets catchers, including Plawecki and Darno, the reason that so many base runners steal against the Mets is the pitchers, not the catchers. Adam Fisher, a former Mets executive, made that point, and he's absolutely right. He made that point when he was with us on Baseball Night in New York recently. The Mets pitchers are so slow to the plate, and they don't hold runners on. Those stolen bases go as marks on the catchers. Those runners are almost always stealing on Met pitchers. I understand if you want more production from the catching position. Maybe they'll take another look at Jonathan Lucroy. They thought they had a deal for Jonathan Lucroy and the Brewers. Well, I lose track of time. I think it was two seasons ago. They were going to send Travis Darno there with some other stuff. They were ready to go on that, and then the deal fell through.
Brewers trades falling through.
They do tend to fall through. There was a famous other one that you fans out there may remember. But so they've liked Lucroy in the past. They would like that Lucroy is a free agent after this year, so it's a short-term commitment because they still believe in Plawecki long-term.
Yeah.
So we'll see. But their thinking on catcher is, if we believed in Plawecki before he had a freak little hand injury,
that isn't that serious.
Why are we going to go get someone else?
I also just, from a personal standpoint, I mean, Kevin Plawecki is a nice guy, and it's not about that even. It's just from the outside looking in, Kevin Plawecki has wanted, I would guess, the starting job for a really long time. Travis Darno unfortunately goes down with an injury. He's got the job for 2 seconds and he gets hit with a fastball and has to leave. And just the idea of them bringing in a veteran so he can be the backup again. I feel for the guy. I feel like he deserves a chance that's longer than 2 weeks to actually play every day. And
yeah.
The Mets have believed in Kevin Plawecki for a long time. It's possible Sandy just wants to give him his chance, and he doesn't have to wait that long because it's not that serious of an injury. It's just that small hairline fracture. Next question, which is genuinely funny, and I'm wondering how many of you out there, you Mets fans listening, are aware of this situation. It's from Mr. Socktober. Does Jose Reyes know about Virus Guy? This is the behind-the-scenes content we need to know. Virus Guy, and I'm riding that fine line between giving Virus Guy the pub that probably he'd like to have, but there is someone on Twitter that changes handles, I think, that calls Jose Reyes a virus to this team and keeps saying that he's the reason they lose, and when they win, I guess he just doesn't say anything.
If you listen to this podcast, there's a good chance you know about this.
Yeah,
I don't
exactly.
know what to say.
That's kind of what I mean.
I'm.
Do you think Reyes is aware of it? Would you be willing to ask him the next time you're at the ballpark?
Sure. There's no doubt that this gentleman or lady is industrious enough and aggressive enough to have tweeted at Reyes.
Yeah, I think.
Would think. Slid into the DMs if possible. If I don't know if they're open or not. I guess probably not. But if he's if he or she is tweeting at me 50 million times and everyone else about Reyes being a virus, probably taking a run at Jose himself would be my guess.
Yeah, I don't think that would scare him or her off. All right, let's dig deeper. We mentioned it earlier, Yoenis Cespedes. As we stand right now, and this is what everyone keeps saying, he's having a strange season. He's hitting 195. He's striking out not just a lot, like a ton,
right,
at a historic rate for him.
Yeah.
And the problem is he, at this point, has played in 21 games and he has 21 RBIs. So he's on pace to drive in 162 games.
That'd be impressive.
Runs.
Yeah.
Not going to happen. But obviously, so that's what makes his season unique. But Andy, my non-hot take here, but I guess my hot take for this for our purposes is, I just don't understand why this is all that interesting. I don't think his year is that weird. This is like a stretch that, from the outside, I would think he's doing fine. It's just his batting average and the strikeouts that has people freaking out. And 195 isn't .095. He's not at that Mendoza line deep into May where it's like he may never recover. I think he's going to be fine. He's coming up big. He hit the ball 465 feet in St. Louis.
He's a big-time player, and he will continue. He did. Like he will give you these moments that are absolutely thrilling, whether you're a Met fan or just a like me, some dude watching the game. It's like, whoa, that's a guy you want to watch hit. I do think that he's a player in the decline phase of his career. Huh. He's 32 years old. Baseball teams don't like to sign players who are over 29 anymore. I mean, I don't think the Mets should have brought him back. I don't think he should be a Met. I think it's going to look like a worse contract as the years go by.
I'm not sure I knew that you had that opinion.
Yeah, I think that he's a great guy. He was the perfect guy to have. Obviously, in the year that they traded for him and made the World Series on his back, they brought him back one more year when no market developed for him. I think they should have called it there because you've got a player in decline who's been up and down in terms of his results and perhaps his motivation. That's a tricky thing to say, but he's a guy who's certainly a different kind of personality and has rubbed people the wrong way and has been a cigarette smoker and all these kinds of things that would say that's not the guy I would have committed to long term. And so I think that you've seen the best of him and will continue to see bursts of really entertaining stuff. I don't think he's going to be a 195 hitter for the rest of his career, but I don't think that that's going to go. Like, in 2 years, Cespedes isn't going to be 2015 Cespedes.
Yeah, and I've heard the argument that in order for the Mets to be great, Yoenis Cespedes has to be that, you know, 2015 dynamic offensive force. And we've said forever about the Mets that the offense is going to go how he goes. He's the guy that always seems to come up in the big situations. But, you know, Salicata made the point last night. That was a Piazza-ian home run.
I might have gone Piazza-esque, but
Piazza-esque.
It's a little, it rolls off the tongue a little better.
Yeah, much better. That was one of those home runs where it's a 3-run home run to tie the game. Huge home run.
Yeah.
And I just don't understand. Like, it's almost as if we didn't know his numbers, would we be complaining? Like, if stats didn't exist and everything was just watching the game.
Yeah, he's made a lot of outs. You might notice that.
He has made a lot of outs.
Even in a world with no numbers.
He's like, for an example, like, if he goes 1-for-6 or 1-for-5 in a game, but the one is a 2-run home run, that's really cool. And he's throwing out everyone on the bases. I'm not at the point yet where I think we need to have this this look at who he is as a player and say, you know, do the Mets have enough elsewhere in the lineup to really?
No, he's good. Like, the Piazza-esque comparison is pretty good. He's what a term in baseball is, like, he's a dude, meaning like he's a dude.
He's a baseball player.
No. A baseball player
is like
Matt Reynolds.
A utility guy. Yeah.
Yeah, a dude is like Mike Piazza, like bam, you know.
What about he's a guy?
He's a guy is like, is he a guy? No, he's a guy.
Yeah.
Like, who's a guy? Tyler Austin, that's a guy.
Oh, okay.
But like Aaron Judge, he's a dude.
Yeah.
You know, so that's that. And Cespedes is one, 195 or not. All my previous comments about is being a guy in decline notwithstanding. He is a dude, and he's going to give you those moments and plenty of them. I'm just saying that's not a guy based on personality and age that I would have committed to for a multi-year deal.
I'm just picturing casual baseball fans, like, are these sayings real? like the guy, dude.
Yes.
It's hard to believe.
This is the way we talk when we're talking to scouts and trying to like have a conversation on their level. Like that's the these are the terms.
Before we get into our Saturday nights, we have to talk quickly about this animating sports thing. If you haven't seen it, if you listen to the podcast, you haven't seen it. You have to see it. It's at Animating Sports on Twitter, and I believe several people from SNY have been in touch with Glenn, I think his name is, who does these for Animating Sports. But he took the audio from our podcast, and almost like when you're watching a documentary and they recreate something, the story of you making your own martini at
Fairly true to life.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of the way it went down.
It was, and do you, how many people have approached you? I mean, I've had, I would say maybe 20 people come up to me, like I had anything to do with it, and say, that was genuinely funny.
Were they all people in this office, or are you talking about, like, you're the Beatles out on the streets now because of this thing?
I will be honest, most of them were here.
But still, they liked it.
Yeah.
They felt, the people that are here felt, I mean, look, we're in broadcasting. We're all egomaniacs. It's like someone made a cartoon of me, so we got a kick out of that.
It is kind of crazy.
But they were good.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm very appreciative because it almost makes us seem funnier than we really are. Like the story, Glenn added humor. That's the thing. He's not just talented in terms of creating a cartoon.
Like, what did he call the Chinese restaurant?
Well, he named the Chinese restaurant exactly what I named it. But he put the name.
On the sign.
Yeah, it was like a super like
generic Chinese restaurant. Or
yeah,
whatever. No, it was funny. It was very witty, and the faces were like very, very accurate. There's a Jim Duquette in the background, and it's just like that's Jim.
All right, so let's talk about this Saturday night, and I'm not sure I'm ever going to be able to do this segment now without thinking of it one day
being, it's
on
being animated.
I will start. Probably my coolest one since we started.
Let's hear it.
I had brunch on Saturday to catch up with a high school friend of mine at 3:15 in the afternoon because Saturday afternoon I was at MLB Food Fest with
John Hine
doing the Baseball Night in New York segment.
Why don't you just go out for a beer by the time it's 3:15? Anyway, continue.
Well, yeah, 3:15 was too late for the brunch. That's the reason why I specified the time.
Okay.
It's just it was basically dark when we left. It was strange.
Right.
So Food Fest, brunch, and then went out to Brooklyn. Had some dinner.
Where in Brooklyn?
Williamsburg.
Okay.
Went to Williamsburg. Then went to Music Hall of Williamsburg for friend Anthony Saladino's band, Animal Years, which I'm giving pub because it's genuinely important to me. Went to college with this kid. And having a friend in a band, by the way,
makes you feel cool.
Makes you feel cool and also gives you something to do like every 6 months that is kind of a genuine reunion. I see the same people at the shows every time they play in Brooklyn.
That's cool. That's like last week when I went to my friend's art opening. Same thing.
Yeah.
A bunch of people you only see at those things. So I hear you on that. Yeah.
And, you know, I was talking about the set list with Anthony. We were invited to the after party. It was very cool. I had a nice social evening in Brooklyn. So I was actually out doing stuff.
Well, this is going to be the first one that
I was out being cool and nice.
I was
being nice,
cool and nice, but cool on this occasion. Yeah, unless were you walking around Williamsburg dressed like that?
No,
because then
you know how many people say to me, like, "Do you just roll out of bed wearing what I'm wearing?" Which is, by the way, if you're listening to this, just a suit, no tie, little pockets.
The decor. You're very conservative dresser for Williamsburg, even when you're not like dressed like that.
I mean, Williamsburg, just everything, a lot of the outfits are just ironic. Like, there are people walking down the streets in, like, robes, and it's, like, just because they can.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I just must be so excited about what I was going to say. Continue.
No, what were you saying?
I was going to say, I came one time from DNL, here, Daily News Live, where I was wearing jeans, like, not dress shoes, maybe sneakers or something, and a jacket. And I went to the Vice offices, which is in Williamsburg, to meet a friend who works there. And there was all this buzz around me like I was an investor. Like, the rich guy must be here because he's wearing a blazer. So that's Williamsburg for you.
Oh, you were wearing a blazer.
I was wearing a blazer, but, like, jeans and
New
Balance.
I thought it was because you were dressed so poorly that they actually thought, this guy dressing poorly in Williamsburg must mean
No, I
really
was the
rich.
Fanciest guy that had been in the neighborhood for a long time, so they thought I was, like, a money guy.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's a good Saturday night. This is the first one that's going to prove our original premise of this, which is that you're younger and cooler than I am. I've been surprisingly young and cool at heart compared to you so far in this.
Just making martinis.
That's right. Jumping over bars to make martinis, going to art shows, things like that. But on this Saturday, I did nothing. I hung out with my son all day, which was really fun. My wife was with her sister, so I was solo with the kid. Went to his first T-ball practice during the day. So wiped out from my week, from that, from my wife being away for the day, that I put my son to bed, read him a chapter of Charlotte's Web, poured myself one drink, and watched some Netflix.
Wow.
That's it. That's all I got.
What are you watching on Netflix?
I was watching this show called Easy, which is this like serial show with a lot of famous actors that are doing these sort of like almost like a bunch of short stories, which is very good.
Hmm. You gotta try Wild Wild Country if you haven't already.
I haven't.
Gotta get into Colts. Colts are creepy, man.
Colts, the horses?
They're creepy in their own right, I guess. No,
all right, bye. Do you have anything else?
Well, that's it for the Shay Anything podcast, folks. We got to a lot of topics today. Make sure, again, subscribe, rate, review if you haven't already. Search SNY Mets in your podcast app. Subscribe to the feed. There's going to be other shows there. That confuses some people, but we are included in that as well. And you get Cerrone, you get everybody here at SNY talking Mets. So we hope you enjoy it. We will talk to you next week.
Bye.